Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, hi, and welcome. I am your host, Emma Gunnar-Wardner, and in my nearly 20-year career as a beauty and health writer, I have interviewed a lot of people. Supermodels, entrepreneurs, authors, celebrities, and doctors. And many of these conversations had a real impact on me, and I'd come away feeling inspired, excited, informed, and really empowered. And at the back of my mind, I'd always think, I wish I could just publish the tape so people could really feel that conversation. Well, on this podcast, you get to feel the conversation. I talk with experts, guests, and a few friends who I hope will inspire, inform, and empower you, and maybe also challenge you, whether you're looking for self-help, self-improvement, beauty advice, health insights, business know-how, or just some good old-fashioned life advice and a bit of a laugh. It's all here. Welcome to the show. My guest in this episode of the podcast is podcaster and writer Gemma Stiles, who many of you may know from her wonderful podcast, Good Influence. I love the premise of her show and how she explores subjects and isn't afraid to go a little bit deeper and explore a little bit further. And where you could say this is especially true is in the way she is able to discuss mental health with her guests, both by being vulnerable and sharing her own experiences, but by being able to keep quite heavy subjects chatty and incredibly accessible. Now, you may have heard me say on this podcast before that I don't mind looking silly and asking a dumb question when it comes to my guests. But as Gemma says, there is no such thing as a stupid question. And how on earth are you supposed to know something if you haven't learned it? So in this episode, we discuss the subject she's felt compelled to discuss on her podcast. And we also discuss our own experiences with anxiety and depression. And listeners, we don't hold back. This is one of the most raw and exposing conversations I've had on this podcast, and I really appreciate that Gemma was willing to go there with me. I think both of us, because we've both been through our own experiences and we've known what that darkness can be like, I think we're both very keen to share as much as possible to help anyone listening who may be experiencing something similar in the hope that something we say may be the beginning of a way out of that feeling. Also, if you're someone who doesn't struggle with your mental health, I encourage you to listen anyway, as it may help you gain a better understanding of those around you who may need your support, or it may just give you a better sense of what they may be feeling. During our conversation, Gemma and I talk about being diagnosed and what that really feels like, what it's like to be terrified by your own thoughts, how paying attention to how you're feeling and noting when things might be going in the wrong direction is a skill worth learning, the benefits of having an SOS system in place with your friends, even if it's an emoji, just so they know that you might need them or you might not be operating 100%. We also discuss the superpower, because that's how we like to frame it, of being highly sensitive, the role of self-esteem and how that has played a role for both of us in both of our issues, and much, much more. The links to Gemma and to Good Influence are in the show notes, which can be found wherever it is that you are streaming and downloading this episode. But please do join me in welcoming Gemma Stiles onto The Emma Gunn Show. Welcome to The Emma Gunn Show, Gemma Stiles. It's so nice to see you and have you on the show. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Thank you very much for having me. I'm excited to have a little chat to you today.
Yeah, right. So you have an excellent podcast called Good Influence. And one of the things I really enjoyed about the premise of that is it's very much about shedding light on topics that maybe don't hit the mainstream. Would you say that's a good way of describing it?
Yeah, quite possibly. I think it's one of those things where I think if you are somebody who is quite, how do I say, on the ball maybe with like trying to like learn about different things, then maybe we do cover things that you might have come across before. But then my aim is to kind of get somebody on who's got either a bit of expertise or, you know, has got the experience under their belt, and then we can sort of deep dive into those things a little bit more. And importantly, from my point of view, is we have like a Q&A section, so listeners of the podcast can ask directly these sort of people who have more experience their questions as well, so you get more perspectives. And yeah, it's kind of, it was important to me to kind of make it a really chatty and sort of welcoming kind of space, because I think, I mean, one of the things that I'm passionate about is that you don't know something if you've never learned it, but it's also quite daunting to try and get a handle on some of these topics when it seems like everybody else already knows what's going on and you're maybe not sure. So making it quite accessible, the conversations, was really important to me. So yeah, by people being able to then send in questions, it can be, you know, from no understanding of a topic you could be coming in, and then, you know, through the episodes hopefully we dive in a little bit deeper. That was a really long answer. I don't know if that's even what you asked me.
No, I really like it, because it reminds me of it, this always comes back as this memory of just sheer chill and fear that runs down my back. And it was when I started a new school and they do the register, and I met everybody, and there were people, and I met Matilda and I met Deborah and I met Louise, and then they did the register and someone said Tilly, and I was, for weeks I didn't know who this, what a Tilly was. And I felt too, I thought, I can't ask what's a Tilly, because I have a feeling already that it's a stupid question. And obviously it was, the teacher knew Matilda well enough to call her Tilly. I didn't know.
Right.
And it just makes me think, I think what you do is you very much sort of don't make anybody feel nervous about not knowing the nugget of information that might have passed them by or that they maybe missed out on. It's like, as you say, it's all about making it accessible and not somebody sitting there too frightened to say, I'm sorry, I don't understand what that is.
Yeah, I mean, that's really nice to hear, because that's what I want it to be like, you know, on the podcast and kind of as a platform in general. But yeah, I'm just very much a believer there's no such thing as a stupid question, you know, if you actually don't know the answer. I mean, and I'm also one of those people who's maybe too happy to just be like, I don't know, I've never heard of it, I don't know the answer. Well, I would love to learn it, but I have no idea. So I think I kind of like expect that other people are on that level too, which hopefully it makes it feel welcoming.
But I mean, learning's a big thing for you. Is that something that you... I would guess it's sort of a twofold question. Is it something that you just found that you were naturally quite good at? Are you quite a good learner? Is that something that you felt very empowered with from a young age?
Yeah, I think, yeah, I would say so. I was like quite, I mean, you can't tell from me talking like quite, but I was a decent academic student at school. Like I tried hard, like I cared about school, but I also didn't find it that difficult. Mm-hmm. It came quite naturally to me. Like I'm a good exam taker, for example, so I think, you know, the way that our school system works, it's very geared up to that. However, then I also went on to, my degree is in teaching, so I've always kind of loved that part of it as well. And yeah, learning is just, yeah, something that I really love and enjoy. It's definitely sort of a passionate thing for me. So I think then through doing the podcast, it's a weird one, because even though I've done teaching and I've been a teacher, I don't like being in the expert position in a conversation, because I mean, especially the conversations that we're having on the podcast, kind of the whole point of it is it's not things that I'm an expert in, and it's getting other people on to talk to, and kind of I get to ask them questions, I get to learn more about a subject, and then, you know, that's the beauty of a podcast, everyone else can listen in and hopefully enjoy the questions that I'm asking. But again, that's the whole point of getting other people's questions too. Like I know that I am just one person, and you know, I can only come at a topic from my own experience, and I don't come from any marginalized background, so I've only got one particular perspective on things. So yeah, I definitely think it's important to get other people's questions in too. But from my point of view, it is just really, indulging myself in being able to ask people questions.
See, this is what I thought was quite interesting. So when we spoke last week, listeners, Gemma and I had a catch-up call last week, and you were talking about, you know, my original plan was to be a teacher. And I said, well, you kind of are. And I sort of thought about that after our conversation. I wondered, and again, I have never done any teaching, so I don't necessarily know. But I thought that actually, if you took teaching in one hand and you took learning in another, teaching is perhaps more static of the two and learning is more dynamic because you gain something from it. And I wondered whether it's maybe whether you really lean into the momentum of learning and gathering and that the teaching is kind of a byproduct of that rather than the main focus.
Yeah, maybe. I think it's a funny one. I personally definitely enjoy learning new things, but then I guess it's maybe sort of, you know, that classic thing people say that when you're learning something, you properly understand it if you can teach it to someone else. Mm-hmm. So I feel like maybe it's part of that too, as in I will learn about new things and then be able to put them out on the podcast. So like be more involved in the topics and feel like I have a little bit more ownership over being able to present things on the platform that I have, I suppose. Yeah, that's a good point. I hadn't really thought about that before.
Because I guess if you are somebody who found learning quite easy, if you were academic, now I, Gemma, was not an academic at school. I sort of bumbled along like a flightless bird, sort of just about scraping by on exams. And I was thinking, what you, I think, do really well is understanding, well, you can learn it. You kind of get it. You see it. It's like, yeah, I've computed that. And I guess the teaching thing is sort of pulling it apart and putting it back together again so that different skill sets or different, speeds of people who learn at different speed maybe can access it. And I think that's what you're able to do. I guess maybe being a good learner, you can then repackage it in a way that makes it accessible for anybody.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. And I suppose on some level, maybe that's what I was trying to do with. So at the end of each episode of the podcast, I have a recommendations section. So the guest who's been on will then recommend myself and listeners other things to go and kind of listen to afterwards if they were interested. So I usually get a recommendation for something to listen to, something to read, and something to watch kind of around that subject. But I think part of the idea of that was also, like you say, people learn in different ways, people learn at different speeds. So if you're somebody who might be interested in a subject and the way that you're going to connect to it the most and the way that you enjoy learning about something is by going and reading a book, then great, here's a recommendation for that. A lot of people don't really pick up stuff in the same way through reading it on a page. Some people don't really like reading, and you would rather sit and watch a documentary or listen to a podcast, or, you know, sometimes the recommendations are literally like songs to make you feel a certain way. So I'm very, very open with what people want to recommend. But yeah, I think, yeah, maybe that's part of the teaching coming through, giving people sort of slightly different options to be able to then learn in their own way.
Now, I was listening to a podcast at the weekend, and it was Joe Rogan chatting to David Sinclair. And he said something on the show that I thought was quite interesting. And I thought, oh, God, actually, that does apply to me. So I've been doing this podcast for 5 years. And how long have you got under your belt with Good Influence now?
Not even a year yet. We're just nearly at the end of season 2. So yeah, I'm a baby of the podcast world, really.
But you've got quite a few episodes under your belt. You've got quite a lot of conversations under your belt. And Joe was essentially saying, when he went back and listened to some of the early things, he was like, man, I was dumb. And what I've been able to do through this podcast and by speaking to all these people is, like, I'm actually quite smart now. I feel so much more competent in talking about things. Have you had that experience with the podcast conversations you've had?
I definitely feel that on some of the topics we've talked about, that I feel like I have a slightly different understanding. And the thing is that it's quite a range of topics that we cover as well. So I'm trying to think back towards the beginning. So quite towards the beginning of season one, I did an episode on comparison with Lucy Sheridan. And that's the kind of thing where just the way she explains things really sort of stuck in my head. And I still will sort of think back to that sometimes. And that's a kind of like very everyday living your life thing. Like a very recent, more recent episode that's just come out this week actually is Callie Thorpe talking about confidence and communities. And that was a really lovely chat and sort of mental health in a roundabout way, but more just kind of our thinking patterns day to day. And those kind of conversations are really nice to then like take forward and sort of put into practice, I suppose. And then there's more practical things like we've done sustainable fashion episodes. So then you get more sort of facts about things and they might change your behaviors, but that is feels more like your standard kind of learning of information, as in it's something that you didn't know and now you do know. So it's a real mixture, I think. But yeah, it's definitely the variety of guests that, yeah, have definitely rubbed off on me. It's been really, really enjoyable.
So if it was about shedding light on some of the topics that perhaps weren't getting in the mainstream, because it's so easy to consume media, we have echo chambers, we have algorithms that are influencing what we see. Mm-hmm. Was there a particular subject or was there a catalyst moment where you thought, I feel like this needs to be out in the world because I'm just not seeing it? Was there any particular subject or topic that you just thought was the instigator for creating what you've created?
I think basically, like, to be quite honest, I think there are so many people who I have learned so much from already purely through following them on probably Instagram. And a lot of the guests who I've had on so far are people who I genuinely have followed for a long time and I've kind of reached out to, and because they've been genuinely helpful and have taught me something already, or, you know, I get some real value out of what they have to say. So a lot of the episodes have been, you know, based on that. And that's been the really nice thing about personally kind of getting to choose all the episodes. And the idea for doing the podcast itself came from, so earlier last year, kind of not too far into when we'd gone into lockdown, I think it must have been. And, you know, we all had, well, I personally had a little bit more time on my hands and was thinking about what I might like to do. And it's one of those things. So I will talk about some of these topics at various times sort of on my social platforms anyway, or I'll see a post and it'll teach me something and I share it on my stories, for example. And then there's always certain people, or, you know, a subset of people who you can just tell, whether it's kind of from like browsing DMs or like if you see comments on a post, there's always a certain number of people who are there for a deeper conversation about it. There are also people who will maybe read the caption and think, yeah, okay, and then move on. But, you know, maybe they'll take it in, maybe they'll think about it later. There's also people who just are there to like look at pictures, and that's kind of fine too, because social media is yours to do what you will with, and if that's what makes you happy in using it, then that's fine. But for those people who were looking to have deeper conversations about things that we were sort of learning through, I mean, maybe it is an echo chamber, but the things that I'm like interested in keeping in that chamber that people wanted to talk about, so things like sustainability and mental health and kind of learning about other things that affect people who aren't me, a whole bunch of things. So to that end, last year I ended up making a Facebook group which was called Good Influence, the idea being that we could share about these topics and kind of have more conversations, because it's a little bit easier to I'm not a huge Facebook user in general anymore, to be quite honest. However, the Facebook group is still a great medium for connecting with people who have similar interests and actually sort of having little conversations. Under the way that the comments are set up is a bit easier to keep track of, maybe. And like the thing is with having the large platform that I'm lucky enough to have is it is quite hard to keep track of things in comments and stuff. Like I try, but it's just quite hard. So that was kind of where the idea for the Facebook group came from. And we have a little different topic every week that we will discuss, and people submit different posts on topics. And it's also somewhere that people share good news stories from around the world. Like we've done loads of different topics. We did towards the end of last year, I think it was one of the best topics ever. We did a culture sharing week, because it's a very international group, and loads of people did like big posts on it, might be their city or their country, and kind of told us a bit about their culture and maybe different foods from where they're from and different like festivals and celebrations and loads of different stuff. It was just it was a really lovely group, and that eventually transformed into the idea for the podcast and kind of really taking that on and hopefully being able to bring those kind of learning conversations to a lot more people.
That sounds lovely. It sounds like getting to travel via a Facebook page.
It was really nice. I think I might have to make that the topic of the week again soon, because it was a great one.
It sounds like a really good one. Now, you've mentioned it a couple of times, and obviously regular listeners will know that we aren't shy about talking about our feelings here on the Emma Gunn Show. And feelings, we aren't shy. And also mental health. And I think I've been really candid on here about the issues that I've had and work on, and you have as well. And it seems like quite a few of your conversations have centered around maybe the starting point had been something that you had experience, and then you get people like Matt Haig on and have a conversation about anxiety that was sort of ended up focusing on anxiety in that conversation. But was mental health an area that you felt was sort of not well served, and was why you wanted to give it space on your show?
It was definitely an area that I wanted to dedicate a portion of the podcast time to. So it's not strictly a mental health podcast, but what I will say is I notice in a lot of episodes, even if we're not really doing the episode on mental health, it always ends up coming in. And I don't really know if that's just because it's something people know that I talk about, so they kind of feel like it's something they can then bring up, or sometimes I'll ask a question. I think it's one of these things when you start talking about it, one, people kind of expect you to keep talking about it. Mm-hmm. And feel like they can talk to you about it, which is great too. But it's also like there's so many examples I can already think of when it happened. So I had Michaela Loach on earlier this series, and she was talking about a campaign that she's doing and kind of against the government, essentially, over oil and gas. And we were talking specifically about her campaign and about activism, and then you end up drifting into what the kind of mental impact is of doing that kind of work. And I think that's the really nice thing, that even though it's not strictly a mental health podcast, I kind of end up almost accidentally bringing it in, because I feel like there's so many different topics that you end up weaving mental health through. And when you talk about things like sustainability, it then becomes quite hard not to mention things like climate anxiety, because it's something that brings people a lot of stress. So yeah, to condense that very long already answer, I think mental health is definitely something that I was very keen to talk about, whether that is on, I've done episodes that are kind of on mental health more generally. We've talked about anxiety specifically. Matt Hay came on and we were talking about panic and panic attacks a bit more. The very first episode of the podcast was with good friend of the podcast, Charlie Cox, who came on and was generous enough to talk very openly about bipolar. And kind of, it was important to me, that's probably quite a good example, to be fair, to be able to get into these mental health issues that we maybe don't talk about quite as much as we should, but also to be able to ask questions that maybe sometimes you feel like you can't. I mean, that was a good one for me to start with, because Charlie is a friend anyway, but just to be able to ask somebody you know, because there'll be listeners who won't know anyone with bipolar or won't really know much about it as an illness. So just to be able to ask the very basic questions, like you say, no such thing as a stupid question. You know, what is bipolar? What does that mean for you in your life? I feel like coming at it from a very basic level, I have found quite valuable, and I hope that other people have gained something from it so far.
Did you have questions about your own mental health that you were able to almost sort of navigate your own path by having conversations with people like Charlie? Because I think from my own personal experience, when I started the podcast, I would sort of reference it. Then I got diagnosed with depression, and then it was, I listened back and realized I had actually been asking in the guise of a conversation that I hadn't pitched as a mental health conversation. I realized I'd been asking for help of all my previous guests.
Yeah.
How did you get over that terrible thing that happened to you? Because I was just looking for a key, and I wasn't asking directly. I was very much asking in a sort of veiled way. Mm. And the diagnosis allowed me to then sort of pull that down and go, well, let's just be really direct about it.
So I was diagnosed with, let's get into the timeline. I was diagnosed definitely with anxiety when I was about 19, depression, I think around 20, then ended up going back to doctors about 23 when I had very severe depression, generalized anxiety disorder. There were questions about mood disorders at different times, and like that, yeah, there's been a lot of different stuff that's happened. I feel relatively secure in knowing where my mind goes wrong now, I suppose you could say. So I think it's been really nice to be able to have those conversations. And I think something that probably maybe makes it a better conversation in some of the episodes. So for example, I had Zoe Sugg on at the end of the last season, and we talked a lot about anxiety. And I think it ended up being a good conversation because I could really understand where she was coming from, because I'd experienced it too. So I think maybe there's slightly different questions that I would think to ask because I already know. But then this is the thing about mental health issues, is they're different for everyone. So then there will be other people who've come on. So, I mean, talk to Matt Haig about having panic disorder. And then we talked on that podcast episode about the one panic attack I've ever had in my life. So I by no means have a panic disorder. But yeah, just being able to bring in my own experience, I have found really helpful in talking to other people about mental health. And I think it makes them maybe open up a little bit more, because they also know that, you know, there's no judgment. Like, I get it. I'm only here to talk about these things for the benefit of other people listening. It's not like a nosiness. It's empathy and kind of wanting to create like a community that can then be supportive for other people. And I think anyone really who talks about mental health very publicly, I feel like that's basically the goal, is to make other people feel less alone. I'm sure you'd agree, because I know you've talked about mental health a lot before as well.
Do you mind me asking, and obviously you're entitled to your boundaries, if I overstep just tell me and I'll back up.
Oh, okay.
But when you were diagnosed at 19, how did that feel to actually have a diagnosis?
At 19, it's hard to say, because so this was, to give some context, it was when, so I'd definitely been an anxious person for a lot longer than this, and kind of, I don't think it had been as disruptive up to that point that I had then gone to a doctor. I found it quite difficult at that stage, I have to say, because so I'd gone to the GP at my university, and they had basically, yeah, said that I was struggling with anxiety. The GP said that she thought it had a lot to do with a lack of self-esteem, which I think was probably quite nail on the head, but was quite difficult to hear, that like that's something that's quite hard to fix. So yeah, she recommended me a book And then also booked me into a sort of group workshop kind of session on anxiety that they were running at that doctor's surgery. And I'm sure for a lot of people, it would have been really helpful. For me personally, it wasn't the right environment. I think, I mean, especially let's just take as a given that a lot of my sort of anxiety and low mood came and comes from a lack of self-esteem and kind of worries in those areas. I think sitting in a circle with a group of strangers, I was never really going to open up to get the most out of that session, to be honest. So I'm sure for a lot of people, it would have been great. For me, it didn't really do what I needed it to do. I still have the book that she recommended on my shelf. I did buy it. I've never read it.
Which one was it?
I think it was literally called Overcoming Low Self-Esteem, I think. And it's funny because I did mention this on an episode of the podcast recently. So I think it was, I was talking to Laura Whitmore on my podcast recently, and I mentioned about getting this book and that I'd never read it. And then a listener of the podcast, a lovely listener, messaged me and said, is it this book that you're talking about? She was like, check the author, is it this one? I was like, yeah, it is that one. And apparently it's amazing and I really just need to give it a chance. So I am actually planning on reading it, because in a weird way I feel like it'll sort of circle a loop and sort of close off a tiny little, maybe insignificant portion of that chapter. But yeah, it's, I think it was a tough time. I think it took me quite a few years to get the kind of help that I actually needed more than that.
I think sometimes I think about the life I lived before I had any diagnoses. And so there's a part of me that when I hear you got diagnosed at 19, I feel really envious, because I actually didn't get my diagnosis until I was 37, which meant I spent a long time out in the world being a complete jerk.
Oh, that's so tricky. Had you gone to doctors like a long time before that and they kind of hadn't really identified it, or did you not even know to go?
I didn't know to go. I just thought my default setting was unhappy and always fighting, because there was always some invisible, someone trying to, you know, I don't know, con me or have one over on me or something. There was a very, so I didn't know. I just thought that that was normal. And so I was sort of, that's not a helpful way to live.
Oh, that's so hard. It really, really makes me feel for you a lot. I think that's one of the reasons why, I mean, you know, you'll always get the naysayers who are kind of, you know, oh, everyone's got mental health problems now. And like, oh, everyone needs to stop talking about mental health. They don't, because there are still people who don't know how much happier they can be than what they are. Like, I relate to that so much. So this was several years later, and I was the first time I was on antidepressants, maybe a few weeks into actually being properly medicated. I just remember one morning where I woke up and I didn't feel sad, and I just burst into tears, because I didn't realize that you could even wake up and just feel neutral. It wasn't that I woke up and felt really happy. It's not like antidepressants, I don't think, give you a kind of, they don't give you an ecstatic, over the top happy feeling. They just let you feel normal. And I couldn't remember the last morning that I'd woken up and not felt sad when I woke up. And it's so emotional, and I think that just to me is why it's important and why these conversations still need to be had. And I think, I mean, I can empathize, to be fair, people who will kind of poo-poo these conversations and think that they're not necessary and think that they're not important probably don't have any experience of this kind of illness. And good for them, to be honest. I don't wish that they would. I don't wish that someone else needed to be as ill as I have been at points to understand how I feel, because that doesn't really help anyone. It wouldn't really make me feel any better. I don't want other people to suffer. But it's difficult sometimes when people don't take this stuff seriously, because it is serious and it kills people, essentially. And it's just, even if it doesn't kill people, it hurts and it harms people for years because they don't know that there's another way. Sorry, I've really gone off on a, it's emotional.
No, and I really appreciate it because somebody was trying to get me to explain. They were like, how does it feel when you've got anxiety and depression? How does it feel? And I was like, pain. And that, and I feel weird saying that now. And I have a, I have it's not a clear cut case of it, but I was chatting to Julia Samuel recently, and it was actually after we'd stopped recording my podcast. And we'd done an exercise on the show, and she said there was something going on. What was going on? And I said, I think I've got survivor's guilt, because I feel really guilty if I express on the podcast that the majority of the time I feel all right now. I'm always very clear, you know, recovery is not linear, but I have a sense of guilt because I don't want anyone who is listening to A, feel they're wrong, or that just, you know, you can be fixed like that, because it's so nuanced and multi-layered. And there is a sense, what you were saying, of for the first sort of couple of years after I really felt like I got things together, I would get this overwhelming urge several times a day as if I was about to cry. And it took me ages to figure out what it was, and it was just so grateful I didn't feel terrible.
And that's a weird emotion to explain to someone who hasn't been there, I guess. I mean, I think everybody understands, you know, the concept of like happy tears, and maybe someone cries at a wedding, or, you know, but it's quite hard to understand the beauty of like neutral tears when you're just so used to things just being grey and bleak and awful. Just to not be so deep in the fog, you just feel so grateful for. So yeah, I think I genuinely I understand that it's hard for people to understand if you haven't lived it, basically. But I think that's why it's important to talk about it still.
And you also said there about the grayness and the fog. And actually, sometimes if I'm trying to communicate with somebody about how I manage the recovery, I'll say, well, I feel as though my mental health issues have a color and a shape and a taste, and I can sort of see them in the distance now. And it made me think about when you said that. Did you ever, did you feel as though you just woke up one day and you were wearing a lens or an Instagram filter of fog and grayness? Or do you think it happened very gradually? Because I think for me, that's what's so sinister about it, is that it can take you over very, very slowly, and you don't even realize it's happening until the fog is so thick.
That's a really interesting question. I'm trying to think back and remember. I don't.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Remember it being a very... I don't know. I almost don't remember it being gradual. And I think there's some parts you kind of block out, because at the same time, you are just living your life while trying to get through this. And especially when it's, you know, it's, you might be in the milder stages of a depressive episode, for example, or you're just kind of, you're not deeply in a bad place with depression, but it's just there all the time. I think it's quite hard to identify. And one of the things I struggled with, and why I didn't go maybe back to a doctor when I should have, was because I found it quite easy at that time to rationalize why I felt sad, because there were sad things happening in my life at the time. Like, there was a family member who obviously I loved a lot who was very ill, and that was very hard to deal with. And it's I think it's easy done sometimes. I mean, there's such a thing as situational depression, in which you are sad and can be depressed, and the depression is caused by circumstances around you, essentially. And there's also not that, and just depression that, you know, this is when you look at people and you think, oh, your life's so perfect, how could you possibly be depressed? Like, this is depression that doesn't follow anyone else's rules. It is what it is. And I'm sure, you know, this, you look at yourself in that situation and think, why am I depressed? What's wrong with me? But at that time, yeah, I did just kind of rationalize it to myself and say, well, of course I'm sad. How could I not be sad? Like, anyone suggesting that there was something wrong was kind of like, well, of course I feel terrible. Like, would you not feel terrible? But it's when it obviously goes beyond that. And then, yeah, I mean, things had to get quite bad before I then went back to a doctor. But it's hard. It's hard to see it in yourself, I think. I honestly can't even remember the question you asked me. I've completely gone off the rails.
No, and another thing is, I'm always trying to think about that person who's listening, who maybe something that we've already said in this conversation has made them think, okay, it's time I go to the doctor, because maybe suddenly realize that this is more than I thought it was. Was there a particular feeling? What was the thing that made you go to the doctor? And did you go and say, I'm coming to you because I need help, because I think I'm anxious, or because I'm feeling this way? Because for me, it was actually, I'm gaining a lot of weight and I'm very, very stressed. I didn't go thinking, I need you to tell me that I have anxiety and or depression. I was going because the physical manifestations of it were troubling me and I wasn't really paying attention to the underlying issue.
Yeah. So I went back to the doctor when I was around 23 or 24, I think. And I ended up going back because I was suicidal, essentially, which I actually don't know if I've ever really talked about before, because it feels like, I mean, it's obviously something that's quite difficult to talk about, but also, I don't know. I definitely think it's a topic where you don't want to say the wrong thing. And I also, I think it would be really hard for, I don't know, for like family members to hear as well. It's difficult. But yeah, no, in all honesty, it was because I was suicidal by that point, because my depression had got so bad. And I went to the doctor because I was terrified that I was going to do something to hurt myself, because I feel like I'd had the thoughts and the feelings for a while. And there was one particular evening where I just suddenly got a bit scared of myself and thought that this might, I could imagine it properly happening for the first sort of time, really. And it was so scary to have that in your own head. And I was very lucky that, so my friend Rachel was who, I can't even remember if I called her or texted her. I can't even remember how I had the conversation with her. But I think I texted her and basically said, like, I need you to take me somewhere, or that, like, I'm not okay right now. And she was quite a new friend as well. So, and she's one of my best friends now still. This was years ago. But yeah, so what ended up happening was she came and picked me up and took me to her flat and basically put me in her spare bedroom for the night, where there was no possible way that I could hurt myself in that room. And then, yeah, the next day, I got very on top of going to doctor's appointments. And I'm very lucky that other people stepped in, recommended me a doctor, said, go here where there isn't a wait time, because at that time I really didn't feel like I had a wait time to give anyone, which that makes me really sad in itself, because not everybody would maybe have that option. And then I'm lucky that I didn't have to go to A&E, for example, that I had someone who could look after me. And it's obviously very different in different situations, and I don't think it would have been a bad thing if I'd ended up, you know, going to some emergency sort of service. I think that's where I was asking her to take me when I text her. But I think she knew that, yeah, it would maybe be less traumatic for me to do it the way that I did it. But Yeah, I don't think I've actually ever talked about that before, so I don't know if I've made any sense there. I'm kind of remembering it off. This was probably 7 years ago or so. So yeah, it's quite a long time ago.
Well, thank you. And I really appreciate you sharing that, because I know that is really, really personal and really, I will use the word precious, because it is quite fragile in the wrong hands. Do you know what I mean? Like, it is that kind of thing that you say out loud and you're holding it like a gentle newborn baby and you sort of want everyone else to treat it the same way.
Yeah, I know. I feel like I need to like just do a deep breath now. Like, but this is the thing. It's one of those things where like I talk about mental health a lot, and it's not something that I feel ashamed of. It's not that I haven't talked about it because I think I shouldn't. But one, it's very emotional. And two, I think going back to, you know, the thing that you were talking about of kind of survivor's guilt, it's kind of when you come out of the darkest periods of depression, you do get that kind of survivor's-y guilt feeling that, you know, other people haven't come out of that place, or maybe didn't have the support to come out of that place, or just haven't managed it yet. And I think, I mean, maybe I should talk about it more, because I mean, it's an example, isn't it? And I think that's maybe what you need to hear, because when you're in that place, you just truly don't believe that you will ever feel happy again. And you will, I can tell you, you definitely will. You might not feel on top of the world every day, but you will 100% feel so many times better than you feel right now. And I know you feel 0% happy right now if you're listening to this and that's actually how you're feeling, but you can feel so much better than this, and you can get it back, and there will be so many more happy times, and that is a promise.
Do you feel as though that experience has actually amplified your enjoyment of life, sort of knowing it's that sort of weird sort of mix, isn't it, of knowing that life can get that dark, and then it sort of spurring you on to make sure that you enjoy the light. Let's just use the light and dark analogy.
Yeah.
And running towards the light a bit more. And do you feel that the work that you've done since protects you from going that dark again, hopefully?
I mean, I always hope so. I've definitely, you know, I've had like periods of depression since then, and I'm not, you know, not immune to the fact it may happen again. But I think that experience has definitely, I don't know if it's made me kind of enjoy things more, but it's definitely made me pay attention to what I actually enjoy. And definitely in my early 20s, I would do more things that now I wouldn't really find that fun. And I mean, to be fair, also I'm 30 now, so maybe I just don't want to be out. But also that means nothing, because a lot of like my friends and friends who are older than me like would still love going clubbing and can't wait to go back to the clubs. I don't want to do it, and I always would. And so like sometimes I go to things, and especially if it's with friends, you know, who would make me feel safe, and maybe it wouldn't be a ridiculous crowd. But now I think it is just knowing, like, to find the lightness and the happy bits. It doesn't mean that you have to do really extreme things. You sort of just notice it. It's probably like I was talking about that day when I woke up and just didn't feel sad. I feel grateful for a day where I just feel meh. Because you know that, like, it can be so much worse than that. And like a really boring, mediocre day. Like, I'm not running around doing circles in my living room thinking, hooray, I've had a really like boring day. But it's just, I feel like you just think about things in a certain way. It does really reframe, I don't know, priorities, perspective. I'm not exactly sure what it is, but it definitely reframes something. And I think, yeah, it's small things then. Maybe you just notice them and you wouldn't have previously noticed them. And you just, yeah. I think you definitely appreciate smaller things more.
You mentioned earlier self-esteem, and I sort of resisted jumping onto it immediately because that was definitely tied into my mental health issues as well. I never formed a sense of self, let alone self-esteem. And so I think a little bit, if I'm getting the right idea from what you were saying, is I almost spent too much of my time trying to whittle myself into a shape that wasn't me because I wanted to fit in, and running towards other people's light. So thinking, well, they are really, they're made joyful by that thing, or they seem to have fun doing that, but then I would do it, and then I would hate myself for not enjoying it. but I never asked myself, you're going to enjoy that nightclub. For the record, I cannot stand nightclubs, and I've sat in the corner with a face on in most of them I've ever been to, just waiting for them to turn the lights up.
Oh, and it does make me feel like a boring person sometimes. But the thing is, I just enjoy different things. And you know what? If the things that I enjoy actually are objectively more boring than your average person, who cares? Like, somebody else will enjoy it, even if nobody else enjoys it. Like, it doesn't matter. Maybe I'm a slightly boring person. Like, I can live with that. If I'm a boring person who is definitely more happy than I used to be, fine. I will take that any day.
Yeah, that's a good point. Did you feel that maybe the version of you pre-diagnosis, and I know it was a journey, but do you feel that the version of you now is the real you, and the person before was maybe trying to be somebody, but not necessarily paying attention to the things that you liked, how you felt when things were happening?
Yeah, I definitely feel like myself now. But I also very much believe that how I feel now will change again at some point. I think it's just part of, you know, going through life and being a person. I don't look at myself in my early 20s, and it wasn't like I was faking my life. I never felt like that. So I don't know. My relationships were real and my friendships were real. And when I went out and went to club nights and things, it wasn't that I always had a horrible time. And it didn't even always feel like I shouldn't be there. It's just kind of, I don't know. I mean, people change too. Like, I was a lot younger. But I think, yeah, knowing what I know now and having those experiences, I think it's hard to say that I would change it, because during that time of my life, I met a lot of people who are now still my best friends and who I see all the time. And yeah, who are like a very big part of my life. So I find it hard to think that I would actually change any of it, because if I hadn't done all those things, then there are a lot of people who I wouldn't have now, who I do have. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't, for that sake, I wouldn't change it, to be honest. That's a weird thing to say, because yeah, there's a lot of the sadness that I would take away. But actually, maybe I'm just super lucky in the nice friends that I have, but they're worth it.
That is really lovely. That is really lovely. And that's quite profound, actually, to think about that, like that even though the journey was difficult, you wouldn't change it because of what you, like the mates that you accumulated along the way.
Yeah, I feel like there's, you know, I mean, it's one of those things, isn't it? Like, oh, I don't know. What's that film? The Butterfly Effect? I haven't seen it. I'm bringing this up as a reference. I kind of know what the point of it is, that, you know, the smallest things change and decisions are different, and then your life goes a totally different way, which is actually very freeing. And this is something that Matt Haig was talking about on my podcast, because it does also mean that, you know, you can change a lot of things in your life at any time and kind of take it on a different sort of strand of the timeline, if you like. But yeah, no, all things considered, I've got a lot of very lovely people in my life. So I think I have to be grateful for that at the end of the day.
Yeah. And I think as well, I mean, I don't know if you feel the same way about just the experience. I don't know, obviously not with people going through illness and whatnot, but I think some of the challenges that I went through, I do sort of think, well, you have a choice of how you come out of this. And I do think my character is hopefully nicer and more robust. And I was chatting to a friend who really struggles with anxiety, and he said, I see it as my superpower. It's absolutely my superpower. I have heightened awareness in every single situation, and do not try and tell me that does not give me some sort of superpower. And I really like that.
Yeah, that is a lovely way to think about it. I wish I felt the same, to be honest. I wish I could turn down the dial on my senses or anxiety at some of the time. To be honest, even aside from anxiety, actually, is it aside from anxiety? Has anxiety given me this personality? I don't know. I'm a very sensitive person. So in the same way, yeah, I'm quite like aware and tuned into things around me sometimes. And that can be very helpful. The one thing I will say, I do think it's made me a far more empathetic person than I maybe would have been otherwise. And I think it has given rise to conversations with other people that otherwise maybe wouldn't have happened. So because I've had these issues and these experiences, other people have come to me and talked about things when they've been struggling with things. And that has been something that I've been very grateful to then be able to be in that position for other people and be there to support someone else when they need it. Because I was lucky enough to have that, like I said, my friend Rachel, who thank God was there for me. That is one of the great things about talking about mental health, is that, yeah, sometimes it does mean that people then come to you for support on things. And yeah, I'm grateful to be able to do that for other people too now. Not that that's a weekly thing, but you know, it happens sometimes. And that's, yeah, when it's people close to you especially, it's nice to be able to feel like, yeah, you can give them something helpful.
It's funny, I think both of us have got these podcast platforms, and I feel very comfortable sharing my journey and my issues and talking really openly about the things that I went through in the hope that they'll help. But very early on, I found it difficult to send the ladder back down, not because I didn't want to, but because I was scared. I didn't know if I was on stable ground. So if somebody would communicate with me, I would think, I want to tell you everything, but I can see it so clearly that I don't want to get too close to it in case it suffocates me again. And now, obviously, I totally appreciate I can't do that.
Yeah, no, I understand that feeling too, honestly. I think, like a clear example of that I can think of is, so there's a sort of text support platform called Shout. I don't know if you've heard of it, but
I'll add it to the show notes, listeners.
So if you're somebody and you feel like it's a crisis text line in the UK. So if you feel like you're really in need of someone to talk to, you know, whether you're in like a very, very dark place, or whether you've just had a really rubbish day and you just need somebody to talk to about it. Basically, they're there for that. And that's an amazing platform. And I've kind of been to like see how it works before and have posted about it. And like, I'm really happy to support them as a platform. However, back to your point, I was thinking quite a lot at the time when I was talking to them. I was like, that volunteering on that platform is something that I would really like to do, to be able to kind of then be there to support other people. And I was talking to someone about the training and kind of got, they sort of showed me what the back end of the platform was. And I don't think they would like show anyone like a real conversation, but it was like a training example of a conversation that you might have on their platform. And yeah, I was reading messages, you know, from someone who was very much in a very difficult place. And just as I was reading it, I kind of got the lump in my throat and I was like, oh, I wish I could, but I can't do this right now. Like for me, I just wasn't in a position where I felt strong enough to be able to carry someone else's pain and feel responsible for it. Which I think, I mean, if you're somebody who can do that and you have, you know, the hours a week to sit at your laptop for a little bit, you know, I think you can do like maybe 2 hours a week or something as a minimum, and yeah, just talk to people who need you, and they give you all the training and everything. I think people who are able to do that are incredible, and I hold out hope that I think, you know, maybe one day I might be able to do that. But I know exactly what you mean in terms of like, it's very hard, at least in my experience, for a certain period of time to put a real connection back to that really hard place. I keep talking about Matt Haig's episode in my podcast, but we kind of talked about a similar thing because it was a question that I asked him, because in The Midnight Library, which was a recent book of his that has done so well, a fabulous book, but he is writing a character who is suicidal. And I had kind of asked him a similar question to what you asked me, which was, you know, did you find that really hard to write, because I think I would find that really hard to write. That was definitely me projecting onto him. And he said he kind of didn't, and had enough sort of distance from it. And like, he would maybe feel a bit sad when he was writing it, but it didn't really drag him down anywhere. And that's quite hopeful for me, I think, because I think for Matt, it's probably been a longer time since he was first diagnosed and since he first started having issues. But I think it's always nice to hear examples of people, you know, when they're further down the path than you are, and you do get a bit more distance from it and feel a bit safer from it, I think. So that's something, yeah, that I hope I will get to at some point. I mean, I'm probably better now than I was in that story. But yeah, I think it's, like you say, it's very much not a linear thing. So yeah.
But I think I was chatting to someone the other day, someone on a Q&A on Instagram said to me, what if you have bad days? Like, they were going through it and they were saying they were having bad days. And I think you have to, one of the most helpful things for me was flipping. So flipping meaning, rather than seeing the world as something that was attacking me all the time, just taking the moment to look at what was happening and think, how is this potentially the universe trying to make me have the best day ever? which is obviously really twee and sort of a silly, but it worked. It really worked for me. And I was saying every time you have a bad day, like sometimes push through it and go, I'm not going to give you the time of day. And sometimes lean into it, turn the computer off, lie in front of the television, and use it as a chance to measure how far you've come. Because this one bad day, 18 months ago, 9 months ago, however many, would have really leveled you. And it's not. Mm. You've just gone, oh, this is a bad day, so I'm just going to kick my heels off and watch Real Housewives. Like, that sort of takes the sting out of it, I think.
Yeah, I think that's something that you learn as well. And some, it's quite like, I feel like when you've had bad depression and then you have a bad day or a few bad days, it's the panic that kind of takes you over, that you're headed, you're like slipping back down the hill and you're not going to be able to sort of go the other way back up the slide.
Yeah,
I think it's partly that makes you feel worse, because you don't just think, I'm having a bad day. You think, I'm having a bad day, so I'm going to have lots of really, really bad days. Mm-hmm. And that's not necessarily the case. I just think you'll always come to the end of a stretch. And yeah, I think, like you say, sometimes giving into it is the way to go, which doesn't always feel great. And I think, I mean, there's certain things that you can do and try. And like you say, if you had certain coping mechanisms, sometimes you just have a rubbish day. But I think a good thing to remember is sometimes everyone has a rubbish day, not people who have depression and go into depressive episodes. Sometimes you just have a really, do I swear on your podcast?
Go ahead.
Sometimes you just have a shit day, and it just is one of those days. But I think, yeah, I don't know. I think therapy helped me with that a lot as well, because that gave me more tools in kind of looking at my thoughts as they came in, if you will. So yeah, sort of realizing what kind of bad thoughts, or what was making it a bad day. And sometimes I'm not even really thinking anything when I have a bad day. I'm tired and a bit grumpy and just feel rubbish. But yeah. Then, yeah, that's one of the things that I find most helpful, is just realizing that just because you have one bad day doesn't mean that the whole week is written off as a bad week. Doesn't mean the whole month is written off as a bad month. Doesn't mean you're on a slippery slope. It's just a bad day.
Now, I know that we are drawing to the end of our time together. I don't want to be too rude and sort of take up too much of your time, but I do want to ask you something, because I have a feeling there might be listeners curious about this. You talked about Rachel having a great friend that you could chat to. And I wondered if you could shed any light on communicating that you are struggling with your mental health to loved ones or to friends in a way that you found to be helpful. Because I know a lot of people say, and I had experience of this, of saying, I really, really need help. And it felt like I was speaking plainly in English, but what was being heard was not the words that I had said. And I wondered if you had any experience of that.
I mean, trying to think back, there's certainly been times where I've done the opposite thing, and there was like definitely a period of years where it would be like people close to me would notice if they suddenly couldn't get hold of me and I just wasn't really replying to any texts or anything. And if it goes on for long enough, I get the text that's like, hi, you're not talking to anyone. Are you in the bad place? What's going on? And then like kind of have to poke me a little bit because I'm not great at that, I have to say. I mean, that example from when I'd text Rachel on a bad, bad night, that was, yeah, I think I need you to take me somewhere. But that is not probably very helpful to other people because she knew exactly what I meant in that case. But I think saying that, it can sometimes be as simple as kind of trying to set up a system. So I know other people who've done this, and kind of if you have a conversation with someone about your mental health when you're not quite at the worst time, and set up some kind of signaling service. So my signal of not talking to anyone is not supremely helpful, but I do know people who will do this, and it could literally be as simple as like a certain emoji or something. And you can literally, like, if you have talked about it before, and you can literally, it's like, if you send this emoji to your friend who knows what it means, and they know that you're seriously not feeling good and you need something. And I mean, that also obviously relies on having the person there and having had that conversation as well, because I know that that's a really hard thing to do at the beginning. I know I've, you know, got enough years under my belt that I've had this conversation a number of times, but I know that that is really hard to do. But I will say, if you feel like you haven't really been able to communicate to someone how you're feeling or the severity of it, and you're thinking, I wish I had a friend like that because I don't, there are then always other people who you can talk to. So for example, Shout, who I spoke to. I mean, there are other, you know, phone lines that you can ring. I think I would have found that quite difficult because it's quite hard when you're really in the thick of it to talk about anything without just crying, or it is for me anyway. So texting is a good way. But it also means that those people can, you know, they're not going to wave a magic wand at you, but they can even just maybe give you some guidance on how to communicate what you're feeling to other people and let them know what you need. Because it might just be, you know, I feel like people are good at doing it when they can really see why somebody's sad. So like if your friend has a really bad breakup, you'll text them and be like, do you want me to come around and just sit and watch TV? You don't even have to talk to me. Just be in the room with them. And I think people don't always know when is the time to do that when it's a friend with depression. So I think, yeah, if you can try and set up some kind of, I don't know, bat signal, body to just system. make it easier for you. Yeah, just like, sort of do your future self a favor, and so you don't have to have the really hard conversation at that time. So somebody already knows just that you're feeling rubbish, and tell them what you need when they ask. If you need them to come and sit with you and do nothing, tell them that. Because they might not know what to do either. If you want to talk to them about it and just have them listen, tell them that that's what you want. If you want them to just talk to you about something completely different and just take your mind off it, kind of, yeah, just have a think about what's actually going to make you feel better in that moment, I suppose, because it can be hard to see, but also people aren't mind readers. And if they haven't experienced it, then it can be quite hard to know what to say to someone in that situation. And that's, again, I think something that you can have empathy for from both sides. But if you are, if you feel able to give yourself that kind of setup system in advance, then it might be something that you'll be quite grateful for down the road, I think.
It's funny you say that. I have two friends who live within 15-minute drive from me, and I started talking really openly on the podcast about my mental health, and they both separately said, we listened to your podcast, obviously we're your friends, like we're 15 minutes down the road and we had no idea. Separately, yeah, they both said like, you could have come over, I would have come round. And again, it's that thing, people don't necessarily see it. People don't, might not necessarily, and you might not have the vocabulary, or you might not, you might think it's really obvious. I thought I was walking around and absolutely like, hello, I literally with a sign above my head saying struggling, and yet no one else saw that.
Yeah, it's tough, it is tough. I think on both sides, it's tough to know exactly what you're putting out there. Because, you know, some people will think they're very visibly depressed, maybe. Some people will hide it as much as possible. So it is, yeah, it's hard to know. But then, yeah, from the other side, same, unfortunately. But again, this is why you have to talk about these things.
Yeah, I do the same thing. I just my MO is I just withdraw completely. That's like
disappear from the universe.
Exactly. Or just like become visible in certain places, like a comet.
Oh yeah. Oh, there she is. Oh no, she's gone again. Didn't get a chance to talk to her. Oh, she seems busy and fine.
I honestly could talk to you for another 3 hours about this. But maybe you'll just have to come back. There you go. Open invitation.
Maybe one day. Yeah. I think it would be an excessively long podcast if we went on too much longer. But that's what happens when you talk about mental health. I'll shut up now.
No, it's been such a pleasure to speak to you. And I really appreciate the way in which you've spoken about mental health. And I really appreciate and value and cherish your honesty, because honestly, I know that information is really precious. Personal information is really precious. So thank you for sharing. And I will obviously share all of the links to Good Influence, to you and everything in the show notes. But this has been a really special conversation. Thanks, Gemma.
Thanks, Emma. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. I do hope that you found that conversation between Gemma and me helpful. If you'd like to get in touch with me, please don't hesitate to email me on thebeautypodcast@gmail.com, or you can always DM me on Instagram and Twitter, where I am at Emma Guns. And if you'd like to chat to me and thousands of other listeners of this podcast, then please don't hesitate. Go to the show notes, which can be found wherever it is that you are streaming and downloading this episode, and click the link to join the Facebook forum. There are thousands of your fellow listeners in there, and we would love to see you. Thank you so much for listening. I will see you on the next one.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.